You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm Lee Keller, joined by John Kuh. In this episode, we will recap the hitter and pitcher performances from this past week, talk about the latest news around baseball, give you all some streamer recommendations for next week, and later on, we will be joined by pitcherless writer Adam Solorio to talk about up-and-coming fantasy ace Jared Jones. But before we get into all of that, John, how's your week been?
It's been not too bad. I am kind of busy with some fantasy stuff because my guillotine league ended up getting a couple of nice waiver wire pickups.
Okay.
One Bobby Witt Jr.
Wow.
And then, unfortunately, Mike Trout. So, yeah, that one sucked. So I had Mike Trout on like two of my fantasy teams. So I've been trying to figure out how to deal with the loss of, you know, a top outfielder, which is rough.
Yeah, so we'll talk about Trout in a little bit. I had him in an AL-only league, so that is an even bigger hole to fill.
Oh, yeah.
Because, man, there's nothing out there on the wire, I'll tell you that. But for people who don't know, what does a guillotine league entail? Because when they hear that, they're like, what, Bobby Witt and Mike Trout you got for free? What happened?
Yeah. Well, I didn't get them for free. I did pay a lot for them in FAP. But, yeah, guillotine leagues were kind of started in fantasy football initially, actually by a guy in Minnesota, Paul Charchian. But anyways, what it is basically is that, you know, you set kind of a period of time. In this case, it's about 2 to 3 weeks in this league. And at the end of the period, basically the worst team gets taken out of the league and all their players get sent to the waiver wire. And then so the day that happens, it's, you know, obviously a really fun sort of fab waiver bidding for guys. And so I bid the most for Bobby Witt and the most for Mike Trout. And now I have $86 out of 1,000 left in my fab budget.
Wow. It's such a cool concept, though. Like, I would love to join one of those because it sounds like a blast. Like, mm-hmm. A whole team is just up for auction, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's rough knowing I have only $86 left, and it's still like a min bid $1, so it's like every waiver wire pickup just sucks in this league for me now. But you know, before Mike Trout got hurt, I was like, oh, that's not bad. I will take that as you know, in for still having $86 left, you know, spending a good chunk of that on two players that would have helped my team a lot was a pretty good proposition for me.
To be fair, in a $1,000 budget, I probably would have dropped like $800 alone on just Bobby Witt. So,
yeah, I think I put down like $630, and I was the highest bid like $130 or something like that. The weird thing is actually the previous guillotine run, Ronald Acuna was available, and he went for $901 or something like that. So
as he should.
Yeah. So it is kind of interesting that, like, so far in the two worst teams that have been chopped, essentially, one of them had Ronald Acuña Jr. and the other one had Bobby Witt Jr. So
yeah, wow.
You know, sometimes having the superstars isn't all it's cracked up to be, but if you can build a good team that can at least survive every single week, that gives you, you know, a good opportunity to compete most weeks.
Absolutely. I'm doing pretty well in leagues, but some leagues I'm falling off really hard because of injuries, TGFBI. Always it happens to me and I hate it. It stinks so bad because I just want to succeed in that. And other leagues that I was excited about, just a bunch of injuries. Like, my dynasty team is like plagued. I don't know what to do because I don't want to sell off everybody and just rebrand, but like I almost have to, but then I have like nothing for sale because all my good guys are hurt. So it's a big mess. I do not like all of the injuries that are going on. And speaking of injuries, we will get into that in just a moment. But before we get into everything, just a reminder to all of you that you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL, and you can send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure that you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform that you listen to your podcasts on. We're on all of them, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google, Stitcher. So make sure that you follow us and please leave a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. It helps us out greatly. Now, moving on to the news from baseball from this past week, we start with the aforementioned Mike Trout of the Angels, who was placed on the 10-day IL with a torn meniscus in his left knee. This injury requires surgery, but the good news is that Trout isn't expected to miss the rest of the season. The Angels didn't even place him on the 60-day IL, so hopefully that means he'll be back sooner rather than later. Still, it's brutal news for Trout, who was off to an unbelievable start. He had 10 home runs and 6 stolen bases in 29 games. So, just an absolute loss for fantasy managers and the Angels. They weren't doing too bad to start the season. Joe Adell's coming to life a little bit. The team's kind of rallying. Mike Trout only had 14 RBI in those 10 home runs, which is pathetic, to say the least. But he is leading off, and a lot of those came from the leadoff spot. But yeah, just a brutal blow for everyone with this Mike Trout injury. Next, we have Grayson Rodriguez of the Orioles, who was placed on the 15-day IL, retroactive to April 30th, with right shoulder inflammation. Craig Kimbrel of the Orioles remains day-to-day with back tightness. He received treatment for it, and it doesn't seem like he'll need a stint on the IL, but keep an eye on his status. Zach Gallen of the Diamondbacks is slated to start next Tuesday. He was pulled from his last start due to a hamstring injury, but it looks like he'll be okay to go next week. Cole Reagans of the Royals was removed from his start on Tuesday with a calf cramp. Byron Buxton of the Twins will receive an MRI on his right knee after being removed from Wednesday's game after attempting to steal a base. Consider him day-to-day until more information comes out. Christian Encarnacion Strand of the Reds is likely to return to the Reds lineup on Friday after missing 5 games due to lingering left-hand soreness. Jordan Hicks of the Giants is pitching through side tightness. He's currently listed as the Giants starter for Friday's game against the Phillies, so it doesn't appear to be too serious. Walker Buehler of the Dodgers is scheduled to make his 2024 season debut on Monday against the Marlins. It's been a whopping 20 months since Buehler pitched in a major league game. He's returning from Tommy John surgery that he had back in 2022. Now, John, the question for you is, if you have Buehler stashed on your IL or if he's available on your wire, do you pick him up and do you throw him out there for his first start back against the Marlins?
Well, I definitely pick him up, that's for sure, if he's somehow available. And I think against the Marlins, especially if you're in a wins league, I think you go for it. You've got a pretty decent win chance with that. Obviously, the Dodgers, they love limiting their pitchers, so I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, he's limited. But if he's able to go 5 innings, right, that gets you a win. If there's like some news that comes out that says like, hey, we're going to limit him to like 60 pitchers or something like that, which would be kind of weird. Like, I feel like they wouldn't have his season debut unless they knew that he could maybe go at least like 80 or something like that. I think it's worth a start, specifically because it's against the Marlins. If it was against like any other team, I think I'd maybe hold off, but the Marlins are one of the worst teams in baseball. So, I think you go for it.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. If he's out there, you definitely pick him up. He should probably already be stashed across all of your leagues on the IL, so you most likely either have him or don't. And if you do have him, Nick always has the rule of the still ill where you're coming off the IL and, you know, you're making your first start back and to probably bench that guy. But in this case, like John said, it's against the Marlins and he has built up in some rehab starts, so he should be good to go. And in a wins league, the Dodgers versus the Marlins, if Buehler just survives through 5, no matter what he does, he should be able to get a win. So, yeah, I think I would roll him out there, too. Next, we have Abner Uribe of the Brewers, who was suspended for 6 games, Freddy Peralta of the Brewers, who was suspended for 5 games, and Jose Siri of the Rays, who was suspended for 2 games after a brawl that took place between the two teams. It was actually a crazy scene. I don't know if you saw this, John, but I was upset because I have Freddy Peralta on a lot of my teams, and I like to watch his starts because he has been electric all season. And I'm watching the start. The Brewers are up 5 runs on the Rays. Peralta gets into a 3-0 count against Jose Siri, and earlier in the game, Jose Siri hit a home run off of him, and he like semi-pimped it. Like, it wasn't a big deal. Like, Peralta looked like he took no offense to it. Siri didn't overly showboat. It was no big deal. It looked like a nothing burger, especially because the Brewers were up. So, not a big deal, right? Well, a 3-0 count, he threw a wide slider, which went all the way into the lefty batter box. Then he threw a fastball that kind of rode in and towards the knees of Siri. Didn't look like he was trying to hit him. Then he threw another pitch that was low in the dirt. Didn't look like he was trying to hit him. And then he threw a fastball. It looked like he was trying to throw that same inner fastball, and it kind of just ran and hit him on the butt. And Siri had no problem, just put his bat down, going to first. And then all of a sudden, without a warning, the umps got together and then ejected Peralta after like 5.1 electric innings. So he got robbed of a quality start. It was just brutal. Like, it made no sense. He clearly wasn't trying to throw at him. Even if you listen to his post-game interview, you could clearly tell he wasn't trying to do anything. Jose Siri even said, "I have no bad blood against Peralta." But then later on, Abner Uribe came in the game, and then he got Jose Siri to ground out and then like chirped to him at first base. And then they like tried to slap each other and brutally missed. And then everyone got suspended. It just made no sense. It was a mess. Those are the suspensions. Also, Pat Murphy, the Brewers manager, he got suspended as well, but no one really cares about that. But yeah, it was just a weird scene in the Brewers and Rays game. Next, we have Chaz McCormick of the Astros, who was placed on the 10-day IL on Wednesday, retroactive to April 30th with right hamstring discomfort. Masataka Yoshida of the Red Sox was placed on the 10-day IL on Wednesday with a left thumb strain. It's bad enough where he actually might need surgery, so make sure you follow up on news with that. Yu Darvish of the Padres returned from the IL on Tuesday and pitched a pretty good game. Francisco Lindor of the Mets left Wednesday's game with flu-like symptoms. He pinch hit and played shortstop in Thursday's game, so he should be okay moving forward. Kodai Senga of the Mets expects to join the Mets rotation when first eligible to come off of the IL, which happens to be May 27th. He's coming back from a shoulder capsule strain. Christian Scott will be called up by the Mets and will most likely make his MLB debut on Friday against the Rays. To me, he's a must-add in all formats, not because he's a Met, but because he's actually filthy. He's gone 3-0 with a 3.20 ERA, a 0.71 whip, and struck out 36 batters over 25.1 innings pitched in AAA this season. So if you can, go out and get Christian Scott because he looks like he's going to be very, very good. And then last but not least, Alek Manoah of the Blue Jays was dominant in his last rehab start. He struck out 12 batters over 6 innings, giving up 1 earned run on 2 hits and 2 walks for AAA Buffalo. He looks like he'll get a possible shot in the rotation on Sunday against the Nationals, but it isn't confirmed yet. John, if Manoah is out there, are you picking him up?
Honestly, no.
I feel the same way, to be honest.
Like I get that it's the Nationals, but the Nationals have some hot batters, and I want to see us at least a start, I think, before I even bother picking up Manoah. It just seems way too risky to go for it, and it's not like he hasn't had issues already this season in the minor leagues. Like, just because he's had one good, like a couple good starts, you know, for AAA does not mean that he's fixed.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. I mean, he was so bad when he last pitched in the majors that I don't want anything to do with him. I have to see at least one start, maybe even two. Like, for me, Manoah right now is just a streamer. So, like, maybe if you need a stream on Sunday, you know, matchups are close, head-to-head leagues, you might need just strikeouts or maybe a win or a quality start. If you just need something and your ERA and whip is out, then sure, grab Manoah, see what happens. You might hit gold because he was really good in one season. But, man, I just can't trust him.
Yeah, it's like if you have the roster spot, like maybe, but I'm so used to really small bench numbers on most of my leagues, and so even the concept of like leaving a roster spot open for Alek Manoah just doesn't make a ton of sense. Like, I'd rather spend that on Christian Scott than Manoah for sure.
Oh, 100%. If you have to choose between Christian Scott and Alek Manoah this weekend, I'll 100% go for Christian Scott. I am completely in agreement with that. But before we wrap this all up, John, any last comments?
The one thing to note with Trout, I don't think there's been any official news on how long he's supposed to miss, like you mentioned. But since I'm in the NBA mood, there was a couple players, Joel Embiid and Karl-Anthony Towns, both who had torn meniscuses, and they came back in about 4 to 6 weeks. So you know, that's kind of in the 60-day IL timeline, but maybe, you know, the Angels feel like he can come back a little bit sooner than that 60-day designation. You know, maybe it's only like the 30 to 45 days that he's out, so maybe he's able to come back in, what is that, June, I guess, something like that. So
yeah,
if that can happen, that would be great.
Yeah, and to be fair, when we drafted Trout this season, right, like we mentioned in our last podcast when we said he was so good and in certain leagues. He was drafted in the third round, in the fourth round. I got him in the third round of an AL-only league. Like, he was just slipping. And basically because we baked in this injury cost, right? Like, we knew he was going to get injured at some point in the season, which sucks to say, and it hurts to believe because it's true. And we knew this was coming. So if he does happen to miss only, let's say, 30 to 45 days, we kind of already expected that. And if he can come back and play the rest of the season as good as he's playing right now, he's going to put up big numbers. Maybe 40 home runs, maybe 15 steals. I doubt he's going to run that much after the torn meniscus.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
Six stolen bases already. He has 10 home runs already. So I'm expecting at least 30 homers if he comes back around June. So at least it's not a doomsday scenario for Mike Trout where it's like, uh-oh, out for the rest of the season. This stinks. But it's still a bummer, but it's not as bad as it could be, which thank God for that.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
But we are going to take our first break, and when we come back, we will get into the player performances from this past week. We'll be back after this. All right, we are back, and it's time to talk about the player performances from this past week. Let's start with this weekend, which was April 26th to April 28th. John, who performed well?
Yeah, we're going to start with the batters. Will Smith, catcher for the Dodgers, not to be confused with Will Smith, the relief pitcher. 4-for-5 on Friday with a double, a homer, 3 runs, and 3 RBIs. The Dodgers got the better of Chris Bassitt in Toronto. Smith started out with a ground out, but then he lined a single to center in the third inning. And then after the Dodgers had chased Chris Bassitt out of the game, Smith hit a dinger in the fourth off Trevor Richards. Last week, I talked about how dominant of a season William Contreras has been having at catcher, but Will Smith had to remind us that he also is an elite offensive catcher. Currently, he's slashing 355, 395, 555, and that's an OPS of 950. So, Will Smith, really solid start to the season for him as well. The counting stats haven't been completely there compared to some other guys, but he's still helping a lot in terms of average and OBP. Andrew Benintendi of the Chicago White Sox on Saturday went 3-for-5 with 2 homers, 2 runs, and 6 RBI. Last season, in 621 plate appearances, Benintendi only managed a 682 OPS, and that was after signing that huge contract that was paying him basically $15 million a year. This season, he's been pretty terrible too. As before this game, he had a 191 batting average and an OPS of 501. However, 2 home runs and 6 RBI can definitely help jumpstart a season, as the White Sox actually doubled their win total with a weekend sweep of the Rays. Since this game, Benintendi actually hit another homer, and that was back on Tuesday. That all being said, though, unless you're in a super deep AL-only 5-outfielder league, there really is no reason to keep Benintendi on your roster, and my TGFBI roster is hurting because of Benintendi for sure. And then Sunday, Francisco Lindor of the Mets went 1-for-3 with a homer, a run, an RBI, 2 walks, and 2 stolen bases. If you overreacted to Francisco Lindor's slow start and sold him early, this probably hurts to see. Coming off one of the best seasons of his career at the plate back in 2023, Lindor is now slashing 298, 365, and 617 with a 174 WRC plus over the last 2 weeks. He also tacked on 4 homers and 3 stolen bases in that time. His recent success has coincided with the Mets' sudden turnaround, as Lee mentioned, and now they're over 500, and Lindor is definitely looking like a top fantasy shortstop again.
Yeah, so Will Smith, I really, really loved last season. He was a rock for me at catcher. I never had to worry about anything. He played almost every day, had the stats to back it. And then this year, famously, across all of our podcasts, I was preaching about Yainer Diaz. And yes, I said I took him over Will Smith, over Salvador Perez in most of my drafts. And unfortunately, Will Smith is playing very well, and Yainer Diaz is doing fine, but not like explosively well. So I'm hoping Yainer Diaz's big boom comes soon as the weather heats up a little bit and the Astros start rolling, because the Astros as a whole kind of have been slumping. So
yeah,
if they could turn it around, I still think I like my Yainer Diaz over Will Smith, but Smith has been fantastic. So kudos to him. Andrew Benintendi, yeah, he has come out of nowhere and started being a good ball player. Makes no sense. I don't get it. But hey, if you're in a really, really, really deep league, then maybe you can grab Benintendi to help you for the short term, because he is not a long-term option at all, as you mentioned. And then Lindor, yeah, no, he is that guy. Like, he is a perennial 20-plus homer, 15-plus steal guy. And even in his struggles when he first came to New York, he still hit 20 homers and stole 15 bases. The next year, he hit 25 or 26 homers and stole 17 bases. And then the following year, he just went 30-30. So there's really nothing to worry about Lindor. If you're worrying about 1 month of a six-month-long season, stop. Just stop. Like, let him heat up. Let him cook. He is now on a roll. He is doing some amazing things. I know we're going to talk about him a little bit later on in the podcast, but he's been fantastic. So just keep rocking with Lindor.
Yeah. Clearly, he's been kind of showing that, at least in roto leagues, very, very productive.
Yep.
Moving on to pitchers, starting with Seth Lugo of the Kansas City Royals going up against Detroit. Got a win in this one on Friday. 7 innings with no earned runs, 3 hits, 2 walks, and 9 strikeouts. I personally thought about streaming Lugo in this start in my home league, but ultimately decided against it. And wow, that was a mistake. Yeah, he did face the Tigers, so that was a little bit more helpful for getting those 9 strikeouts. But his breakers were fantastic, and his heaters were doing well around the zone as well. It's kind of crazy. I think he has like 7 different pitches or something ridiculous like that. But he was locating all of them pretty decently. It's not just the opponent. You do have to have the ability to take full advantage, and that's what Lugo did. The struggle with him season long is that he just has a complete lack of strikeouts. Yes, he had 9 in this one, but that's pretty much an aberration for pretty much all his other starts. But he is an absolute workhorse. I think he leads the league in innings pitch right now, and his ERA and WHIP are looking real nice as well. So Lugo, definitely worth a pickup. I know we talked about him a couple weeks ago. You'd mentioned he should be rostered everywhere. And yeah, I think like if you have your strikeouts kind of taken care of in other spots by other pitchers, Lugo is definitely a good pickup. Tanner Bibee of the Cleveland Guardians went against Atlanta with a no decision with 7 innings, no earned runs, 2 hits, no walks, and 9 strikeouts as well on Saturday. Another start of Bibee executing the Blake Snell blueprint, most impressively with his slider and his changeup actually getting down consistently at this one. And yeah, he also did this against Atlanta, which is pretty impressive. The strikeout numbers are good, and although the ratios are about average for the season, he's not getting a bunch of wins despite starting for the AL leading Cleveland Guardians, which is kind of interesting. That all being said, put all those things together and he's still a top 40 pitcher for your team. Eric Fetty of the Chicago White Sox got a win against Tampa Bay on Sunday with 8.1 innings, 2 earned runs, 7 hits, no walks, and 9 strikeouts. Wow, 3 pitchers with 9 strikeouts. I swear I didn't plan that. Fetty actually now has 20 strikeouts over 2 games. What worked for him? His sweeper had a lot of outs in play and a decent number of whiffs. The sinker and cutter were also pretty decent as supporting pitches, especially in terms of getting called strikes on the cutter. 7 total on that pitch. Still, this type of line for Fetty should not be expected, especially as he still locates way too many sweepers in the zone. He's probably worth a pickup for his next couple starts. He has some easy opponents, but I would tread with caution there.
So I've preached Seth Lugo for so long now. I mean, I've followed his whole career because he was a reliever on the Mets before anything. And he wanted to start for the Mets, but we really didn't have a spot for him. And this was back when the rotation was Harvey, DeGrom, Wheeler, Syndergaard, and Mats. And that was all in their heydays, not like the current versions of all of them besides Wheeler. So he really couldn't fit in the rotation, but he was dominating as a reliever, and all he wanted to do was start. So when he became a free agent, the Mets wanted to sign him again, but couldn't basically dedicate a starting role to him. So I remember the offseason when we did the podcast and he signed with the Padres, I said, I'm really looking at Lugo in this one because if he gets the chance to start, he's going to be really good. And he did, and he was serviceable. And I think every fantasy team needs at least one staple guy that isn't going to be an absolute ace. And obviously Lugo is pitching like an absolute ace right now, but Lugo is like a Chris Bassett type, right? Or a Ranger Suarez type at the moment, where he's going to get you quality starts, he can get you wins, he's going to give you maybe a strikeout per inning on most days, and he's going to keep the ERA and WHIP low. And I feel like a stable rock like that in your rotation goes such a long way for fantasy that it's just a guy you can rely on. And Lugo is that guy, especially this season. I mean, you said this was against Detroit, of course, on Friday. But then on May 1st, which was on Wednesday, he pitched against the Blue Jays, went 7 innings, 8 strikeouts, 1 earned run, a .57 whip, and got a quality start. Like, he's just been so good. So if he's out there in your leagues by any chance, maybe you play in a really shallow league, pick him up and roster him until the wheels fall off, which I don't think they will. It's not going to be this good, but he's just a great pitcher, so definitely believe in him. The Royals' rotation is actually sneakily good, so it's cool to see Seth Lugo being a great starter. Tanner Bibee's finally bouncing back, which is great to see. And then Eric Fetty, man, I am so frustrated because in TGFBI, I have like 6 injuries, right? And if you don't know what TGFBI is, it's a big industry league, 15 teams. There's a big overall. It's like 380 people. And there's no IL spots. No IL spots, and it's a roto league. So I have 6 injured really good players, and I either cut them and lose them, or I cut somebody else because I have to start somebody in the injured people's places. And I was like, man, I really want to pick up like Ryan Weathers and somebody else, which is just a big mistake. So I was like, who do I cut? And at the time, Eric Fetty was just pitching like all right. And then his next 2 starts after I cut him, dominant. And he was picked up for like $123. And then same thing with Tommy Pham. He wasn't signed to a team. And I was like, okay, I can't roster him because I have too many injuries. I'd love to hold him, but I got to cut him. And I cut him. He signs to the White Sox the very next week, starts dominating, and then goes for $90 in our fab. So I am just very upset with Eric Fetty because I believed he was going to do this. And for some reason, I had to cut him because of injuries and it's blowing up in my face, and I regret it. Same with Tommy Pham. But anyways, Eric Fetty has been really good. He's a different pitcher. As we said, he came over from Korea and dominated in that league, won the equivalent of the Cy Young. And we expected him to not look like his former national self, where he looked like one of the worst pitchers in the league. And this is just a new version of him. He looked incredible. And all of his different pitches are succeeding in the last 2 starts, which is really good to see. So Eric Fetty right now, streamer type, but he has the upside to be someone that would stick in your rotation.
We'll see if that sticks. I don't even know if he'll stick in the Chicago White Sox rotation, but they did pay him a lot of money to do this. So
there's no way anyone in that farm system can replace him.
That's true.
There is not one guy that probably has a candle to Eric Fetty. He's their ace.
That's unfortunate, but yeah, that's true.
Yeah, him and Garrett Crochet are men on a lonely island. It's very sad to see, but yeah, no, Eric Fetty's going to be in the rotation, but if he can do this, which once again, possible, but not likely, he could stick in your rotations. But for now, I would just call him a very good streamer. Mm-hmm. Moving on to Monday, April 29th, thanks to Christian Ottoman for the If I Could Turner Back Time Hitter Recap article. We start with the title boy himself, Justin Turner of the Blue Jays, who went 2-for-5 with 2 home runs, 2 runs, and 3 RBI. Turner is having one of his best starts to a season with a 154 WRC plus in 29 games. His numbers are not necessarily setting the world on fire, but he's above the 70th percentile in runs, homers, and RBI, and above 85th percentile in his slash line. For a guy who is probably available on the back half of your draft, or even on the waiver wire, that will play. He's been a consistent contributor all year, and he's batting 3rd to 5th in the Blue Jays lineup on a regular basis, so he is definitely a sneaky good add if he's out there and you need some help in the corner infield or a third base slot for the time being. Next, we have CJ Abrams of the Nationals, who went 1-for-3 with a home run, 2 runs, 2 RBI, 2 walks, lots of 2s, and a stolen base. Unfortunately, not 2 steals. CJ Abrams continued his scorching hot start to the season on Monday night, drilling a 2-run homer and recording his 5th steal to record the only combo meal of the night. Abrams is tearing the cover off of the ball in 2024, and the most exciting development is that he's doing a huge amount of damage against lefties. He struggled mightily against them in years past. With last night's homer, Abrams now owns a whopping 1173 OPS against lefties in 36 at-bats. Should this development stick, we could be looking at a very special season from the potential superstar.
Yeah, CJ Abrams to me is one of those guys where he had a lot of hype in draft season, and he's completely like paid that off. So, yeah, shout out to him for just doing so well. And I was looking at the whole like lefty righty thing because obviously he faces righties a lot more because there's just more righties in general. In the league, and you know, for them, he's hitting them at around like in the mid 800s in terms of OPS, so that's like, you know, borderline all-star level. But if he's hitting at an MVP level against lefties, like that really puts his average OPS kind of around like in the mid 900s, which is really solid. So yeah, clearly Abrams is cooking. And then Turner, yeah, I mean, like I don't know how long I want to believe in him being good. But clearly he is doing super well at, I believe he's like 39 years old or something ridiculous like that.
So, yeah, very close. Either that or 40.
Yeah, so still be a good contributor, especially for a Toronto team that's been kind of dealing with some lack of offense issues. So Really solid get for them, and he's basically playing like every day for them. So good pickup for both your fantasy teams and for Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, with Turner, I'm more worried about his health, right? Like, is he going to stay healthy for more than X amount of games? So if he can stay healthy and contribute like this, I mean, we've seen his bat be good for a long, long time now. So I believe the production, but we got to believe the health. And with Abrams, it's interesting. So quick little question for you. If you rostered O'Neill Cruz, would you trade O'Neill Cruz straight up for CJ Abrams? Now, Cruz has had his own struggles this season, but obviously came into the year with more hype, more expectations, hopefully better numbers than CJ Abrams. But right now, would you make that trade?
Ooh, that's tough.
It's a tough one, man.
Yeah, that feels like a coin flip to me. Maybe Abrams because he's just doing better overall. I think the struggle for both is that it's tough for them to get runs at RBIs because they just kind of play on poor offenses. And it's weird. Pittsburgh, I think, has like a bottom five offense of the league this year, while the Nationals have a little bit better offense than them in terms of metrics right now. I might go with a hot hand and go with Abrams, though. But I do love O'Neill. I have him on my team in my home league. I paid a lot in FAB to get him, and it pays me to say Abrams, but I think I go with Abrams.
Yeah, it's tough for me too. I also was someone who paid a premium for O'Neill Cruz during draft season, and I still believe in him. I'm not writing him off after 1 month. I just told everyone that was worried about Lindor for a month not to worry and panic. It's a little bit different with O'Neill Cruz because there's no real track record. We're kind of going off of prospect pedigree, what we saw in spring training, the leaps and bounds he made in the 1 week he played last season before he got hurt. So he's got a lot of hype, and he's striking out quite often right now. He's grounding out quite often right now. He's not really elevating the ball and hitting home runs. He's still got three homers and three steals on the season, but we're just not seeing anything, and we need to see something soon. Otherwise, we might be in trouble, but I'm not panicking quite yet. But I do think I trade O'Neill Cruz for CJ Abrams. I think I do at this point in the season because a lot of question marks, and obviously O'Neill Cruz's upside trumps CJ Abrams. And it's really not too much of a trump. Like, we're hoping for what? Like a 30-30 season from O'Neill Cruz?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, like his ceiling, maybe 40-40?
I don't think it's 40-40. But 30-30, I think, is what we'd expect.
Right. And CJ Abrams can easily go like 20-25 homers and 40-50 steals.
Yes.
And in theory, that's pretty similar. Like, obviously, O'Neill Cruz gives you a little bit more power, but Abrams gives you more speed. So it's kind of what you need for your team. CJ Abrams also has his own struggles and troubles as well, but right now Abrams is performing and O'Neill Cruz is not. So if you are falling down in the standings and that trade is offered to you, I think I go with CJ Abrams, but it's hard to give up on that potential of O'Neill Cruz.
Yeah, I will say one thing. O'Neill Cruz is cutting down the strikeouts. It's coming down just ever so little bit, but it is coming down.
Yeah, in general, from his previous showings, it's coming down, but it's still very high this season.
For sure, yeah. But
that's not great.
I'll take any improvement I can.
True, 100%. I'm with you on that one. Moving on to the pitchers from Monday. Thanks to Nick Pollock for the Of Bryce and Men SP Roundup article. We start with not the title boy. You would think so, but it's not. Bryce Miller of the Mariners, who went 7 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 2 hits, 1 walk, and 10 strikeouts against the Braves. Now, Nick's article was technically headlined by Bryce Wilson, but we're going to talk about the much better Bryce Miller of the Mariners, who dominated the Braves on Monday. He had a perfect game after 5 innings pitched and looked electric. He had 15 out of 59 whiffs on fastballs and used that as his main tool to get outs. He also got outs on the secondaries, but the only problem with Miller is the lack of command with the secondaries. If Miller can spot those sweepers and curveballs a little bit better, he can become a true fantasy ace because the results right now are there and those secondaries are not great. So if he can just improve on that, man, he is looking good. Next, we have Luis Severino of the Mets, who went 8 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 1 hit, 2 walks, and 5 strikeouts against the Cubs. Another pitcher that flirted with history on Monday was Severino. He had a no-hitter going into the eighth inning before it was undone by Dansby Swanson. He blew his fastball past the Cubs lineup and threw some nasty sweepers in this one as well. This isn't the fantasy ace that we once knew, but Severino has proven to be pretty solid this year so far, and I expect him to be a top 60-ish pitcher all season, as long as he remains healthy. And that's the big asterisk next to Severino, is can he stay healthy? And lastly, we have Nick Lodolo of the Reds, who went 7 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 1 hit, 2 walks, and 11 strikeouts against the Padres. Lodolo had a golden goal in this one, 22 whiffs, and a 37% CSW, and he looked untouchable. He executed the Blake Snell blueprint to a T, with 4 seamers upstairs and curveball spotted low. Lodolo has had some horrible luck with injuries these past few seasons. We've been waiting on this breakout from him, and it looks like it might finally be happening. If possible, I would try to buy him from opposing fantasy managers before it's too late and the price is too high, because someone might be willing to try to sell high on Lodolo because of this hot start and his injury history. And I think if you can get him for the right price, he is worth snagging.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how Lodolo continues throughout the season, because he looked great last year until, those injuries hit. So hopefully this year he can stay a bit healthier.
Yeah, I would love to see that for him for sure.
Yeah. Well, moving on to Tuesday's games, thanks to Mark Stubinger for All I Do Is Win Seal. That's the name of the article, and because we're talking about Wensiel Perez, who, like most of us, I had never heard of before Tuesday. he went 3-for-4 with 2 homers, 3 runs, 3 RBIs, and a walk. And that was actually from the second game of a doubleheader against the Cardinals. He went 0-for-4 in the first one, but solid day in the second one. Who is Wensiel Perez? Great question. He's a 24-year-old right fielder. He has second base eligibility in Yahoo. He signed with the Tigers in 2016 as an international free agent. And that's kind of the story behind him. He doesn't have a ton of pop, but has really good plate discipline, top-tier speed on the base paths. In this season, 48 plate appearances. He's slashing .302, .375, .628, has 3 homers, 2 stolen bases. And he has consistent playing time, thanks to the fact that I think he actually has more homers than Spencer Torkelson, which I think is kind of funny. He's not something I would necessarily rush and pick up, but in those deeper leagues, 14-teamers and more, he's a really good add right now if you need stolen bases or you're in an OBP league. His teammate, Riley Green, went 4-for-9 with 2 homers, double, 2 runs, and 3 RBIs over the entire doubleheader. He didn't have 9 at-bats in one game. But really solid day for him as well. Hit a homer in both games, the first one and the second one. In the first one, he was batting leadoff, and for the first time, he was moved to the cleanup spot in game 2. Homered from that position as well. Doesn't matter. He's that good of a player. Green is now up to 7 homers on a season with a .396 wOBA. His Savant page looks like a red paint can spill with 98th percentile walk rate, 98th percentile barrel rate, and a 92nd percentile X wOBA. So far in his young career, we've been robbed of seeing him play more than 99 games, so hopefully this is the breakout that we've been waiting for, and hopefully he stays healthy.
Yeah, the key is healthy for Riley Green, because Riley Green, like you said, hasn't played more than 99 games, which is just brutal, in 3 seasons. So he's played like 92, 99, and now whatever the amount of games so far, 29 or so. So if we can get a full season out of Riley Green, he could have 25-plus home run potential with a really good on-base percentage. I think it's like .390 right now. So I look at him as kind of like a Juan Soto light. Like, he's not going to give you 100 runs, 100 RBI, and 35-plus homers like Soto does, but he could give you 25 homers, 80 runs, 80 RBI, maybe 5 steals. Just Juan Soto light. And for someone who was drafted really late in drafts or picked up from free agency, Riley Green is going to be a stud for your fantasy teams. And if he's out there, go and grab him because he looks good. And then Wensiel Perez, only in the deepest of leagues, go and grab him because he will get you a lot of steals. He hit 2 home runs in game 2 of the doubleheader, which is kind of weird because he doesn't have a lot of pop. But those steals will add up, and he's got a good on-base percentage as well. So those Tigers are looking pretty good.
Yeah. Well, moving on to pitchers, Jack Rarity is the title of the article from Nick Pollock, starting because of Jack Flaherty. Went up in that doubleheader. 6.2 innings with no on runs, 2 hits, 1 walk, and 14 strikeouts in game 1. Kind of a revenge game for him. Clearly, he was on some adrenaline, throwing 1 to 2 ticks harder on everything, especially his fastball, which almost hit 98 miles an hour. It would be hard to expect this as standard for Flaherty moving forward, as the Cardinals aren't the greatest offense, and I'm sure there was a little extra motivation in this game for him as well, but some stuff is better repeatable, like better fastball location, so see if that is something that Flaherty takes away from this game. Yu Darvish of the Padres went up against Cincinnati, got a win as well, got 5 innings with no earned runs, 3 hits, no walks, and 3 strikeouts. After a trip to the IL, we saw the old sinker-slider version of Darvish here, and it worked for 5 full innings, giving him a proper win despite his limited pitch count. I'd imagine it's a different version of Darvish in his next outing at the Cubs. Don't see a reason not to start him there. He's going to use his full arsenal of 6 to a bajillion pitches to go up against the Cubs. And yeah, if he's looking healthy and the Padres let him go, you know, full 6, that will be, probably a pretty good start.
Anyone who thinks revenge games aren't real, Jack Flaherty is living proof that revenge games are real, because he looked like a man possessed against the Cardinals. He wanted to show all of them that he still had it, and they made a mistake. And man, 14 strikeouts is just absurd. Flaherty looked dominant in this one, and he's not going to keep this up. He's been great this season, and I think he's going to be a great pitcher all season long, but don't expect more starts like this unless he plays the Cardinals again. But man, Flaherty looks really good to start this season. If you can pick him up, once again, we always say this, we're always really late to this. Like, you should have picked up Flaherty a month ago. You know, right when the season started, Flaherty was a good option to have. He might be a streamer, though, in your leagues, and people might not know. So if they don't know, pick up Jack Flaherty. They probably found out after a 14 strikeout game, but Jack Flaherty looks really, really good. And then Yu Darvish, just a stud. He's always going to be good. You always throw him out there. And welcome back from the IL. Now, before we get into Wednesday and Thursday's performances, we are going to take a quick break, and we'll be back after this. Moving on to Wednesday, May 1st, we start with the batters, thanks to Seth Klusmeyer for the Big Willie style hitter recap article, and we'll start with Big Willie himself, Willie Adames of the Brewers, who went 2-for-4 with 2 home runs, 2 runs, and 4 RBI. Adames has been completely under the radar good for fantasy teams so far. Like, I didn't even realize how good he was doing until I just looked into him. He has a 278, 373, 496 slash line with 6 home runs and 4 stolen bases, 18 runs, and 21 RBI. That's fantastic. To no surprise, Adames is a free agent next season, so it makes sense that he's absolutely balling in his walk year. If Adames can keep this up, he will be a top at least 7 shortstop for fantasy, maybe even top 5. So Adames looks to be doing well this season. And next we have Tommy Pham of the White Sox, who went 2-for-4 with a double, a homer, 2 runs, and 2 RBI. Hey everyone, did you know that Tommy Pham signed with the White Sox? Because he did. And since he's joined the team, they've started to win. Who knew adding a good hitter to your lineup for cheap would improve your team? Good job, White Sox. Speaking of adding a player to your lineup for cheap, Pham might be available on the waiver wire in your league. And if you have 5 outfield spots or are in a deeper league, you should 100% grab Pham, because last season, his underlying metrics and Baseball Savant page looked great, and he put up 16 home runs and 22 stolen bases. And no matter what league you're in, that will play.
So here's what I'll say about Tommy Pham. The White Sox are the worst team in Major League Baseball. They have no offense. But if Luis Robert Jr. can come back healthy, which is a big if, if Yoan Moncada is somewhat healthy and back to being an okay player, they've got a shot to be decent, right? They're not going to like be stuck at single-digit wins the entire season. So there is something to be said about Tommy Pham potentially getting more run and RBI opportunities as the season goes along. But right now, there's a big lack of RBI and run opportunities on that team just because no one is getting on base. So I think he's still worth a look at, but I wouldn't go rush and pick him up. With Willie Adames, definitely, if he's available, pick him up for sure. He's on one of my fantasy teams, I believe. And I didn't realize how good he was doing. You just kind of start him every single day and you don't really pay attention to what the season stats are. But yeah, that's a pretty solid slash line. Being able to be like kind of an all-star caliber player is really solid, and it's kind of leading to why that Brewers team is doing so well, like we talked on the pod last week.
Yeah, the White Sox are really banged up. Like you said, Robert's hurt, Moncada's hurt, Eloy just got back from being hurt, so they have pieces like Andrew Vaughn, if he could take a step forward, Eloy, if he could stay healthy, Robert, if he could stay healthy, Moncada, if he can get out of his own head. Like, they have some good pieces, but they've never been like a collective unit as a team. And I think if we could see them all healthy, playing well, they don't have a bad lineup, but currently they have a very bad lineup, and Tommy Pham makes it a little bit better. Moving on to the pitchers from Wednesday, thanks to Nick Pollock for the O Panada SP Roundup article. We start with Shota Imanaga of the Cubs, who went 7 innings pitched, no earned runs, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 7 strikeouts against the Mets. Shota finally earned the latter half of his name, AGA, from Nick last week, and here he is again, dominating. His velocity was actually down a touch in this one, but it didn't matter, the Mets couldn't do anything with him. Once his secondary start getting more play too, like the slider, he could be even better. What a steal of a signing from the Cubs this offseason and in the late rounds of your fantasy drafts. I wish the Mets signed this guy because he looks so good. And next we have Joe Musgrove of the Padres, who went 6 innings pitched, 2 earned runs, 4 hits, no walks, and 9 strikeouts against the Reds. And look who's back. It's Joe Musgrove in easily his best start of the year, which isn't too hard to say because he has been dreadful so far. Things fell into place for Musgrove in this one. His velocity was up a little bit, and all of his pitches were thrown perfectly in and out of the zone. If he can keep this going, Musgrove will make all fantasy managers breathe a sigh of relief, and hopefully be that stable rock in your rotation like we expected.
I'm curious about Musgrove because this was obviously like his best start, right?
And, By far.
I'm wondering if it's going to stick. Because
I'm scared about it.
He's been so mid this entire season.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was on the waiver wire in my home league, and I didn't bother picking him up because I was just afraid of kind of the regression there. If he can continue at this level, for sure, that's he's definitely worth trying to figure out in a trade or hoping someone drops him, but. Yeah, it's an interesting situation with Musgrove.
Yeah, I mean, he has 4 quality starts this season. It kind of goes like this. He got shelled by the Dodgers to start the season, but that was in the Seoul series, so it doesn't count. I know it counts for the year, but it just was like spring training for them. Then he got dominated by the Giants. Then he pitched really well against the Cardinals, going 6 innings, 7 strikeouts, 1 run, 1 whip, 1 quality start, so pretty good. Cubs, he got shelled. Brewers, he pitched okay, 6 innings, quality start, 3 runs, 3 Ks, nothing special. The Blue Jays, this was a good start, 7 innings, 3 Ks, few runs, 0.71 whip, so it looked good, quality start. And then he got destroyed by the Phillies before this start against Cincinnati. So, yeah, it's kind of shaky. Musgrove was injured last season, and he looked really bad to start so far. So I think he's going to find it because we've seen him be really good as of late. The past few seasons, he's just been a very reliable pitcher. So I think he can get back to it, but I can't lie and not say I'm a little bit concerned.
Yeah, but, you know, maybe it's a situation where, you know, you don't pick him up for a lot of fab. If somehow he got dropped and you have him some in your league, maybe you don't put a lot of fab on him. And if he does do terrible, it wasn't that big of an investment.
Yeah, and I think it's a decent buy low target, too, for trades.
Mm-hmm, for sure. All right, moving on to Thursday's games. There were only 6 games today, so a lot of slim pickings, but we're going to start with Ryan Mountcastle, 2-for-4 with 2 runs, 2 RBIs, and a homer. Mountcastle has been a pretty steady presence in this Orioles lineup, usually batting 3rd, 4th, occasionally 5th in that lineup. It doesn't matter who they're facing. He's in the lineup pretty much every single day. And while he's not necessarily doing as well as another first baseman that we talked about, Justin Turner, he's still holding his own as the 7th best primary first baseman in WRC+. So, yeah, he gives you an opportunity to get some exposure to the Orioles offense, similar to Ryan O'Hearn, which we've mentioned in the past. But Mountcastle is like firmly in the cleanup spot for that team, and he's been looking really good there. And then Lindor, who we talked about earlier, went 2-for-3 with a run and 4 RBIs in this game. What was surprising, of course, was that he wasn't exactly expected to start in this one because of some sickness. He basically had his flu game. I think that's the best way you can describe it. Apparently, the night before, his wife basically set like water, nausea medication, Tylenol, Pedialyte next to his bed. And I guess that fixed him up because I guess today, this morning, he was telling Carlos Mendoza, put him in the game. Mendoza said, we're not going to start you, but you're going to get an opportunity. So he entered the game in the sixth for Joey Wendell and then proceeded to rip the heart of my fantasy team because I'm facing Lindor. He hit two doubles and he batted in the walk-off run in the 11th. So, yeah, I think it's safe to say that Lindor is back.
Yeah, this was an awesome game to watch as a Mets fan. Like, he came in the sixth, and the Mets were down like 5-2. There were two men on. He pinch hit for Joey Wendell, came up, ripped an RBI double, and, you know, made the game 5-4. Then Nimmo got a hit and brought Lindor in, tied the game. And then, of course, he comes in the 11th, up to bat, hits a double down the left field line. The other one was down the right field line, and brings in another two RBI and hit the walk-off for this 7-6 win. So very cool out of Lindor once again. He is great. Stick with him. He is an awesome player. And then Ryan Mountcastle, just a guy who hits home runs. And that's like the best thing I could say about him is, like, if you need some home run potential in the right matchups at the right parks, like, unfortunately, his home park is probably one of the worst for right-handed hitters. So it's tough. I mean, he does hit moonshots, so it doesn't really matter that the wall's that far, but it's much harder to hit at his own home park because of that wall. So with Mountcastle, if you need production in deeper leagues, maybe in a corner infield spot, then Mountcastle's a good option. But other than that, he's kind of just a hot bat that you ride if you need him.
Yeah, and that's kind of sometimes what you need in fantasy.
Oh, yeah.
Moving on to pitchers then, Kyle Harrison of the Giants, 5 innings with 3 hits, 1 earned run, 5 walks, jeez, and 7 strikeouts. Even reading that line is kind of scary to me. But Kyle Harrison, yes, he's still technically a rookie. He only started 7 games last season. Had himself a nice one today, thanks to that fastball, which earned 10 whiffs on its own. Overall, 21 called strikes and whiffs on 63 pitches, so about a 33% CSW there. His 2 breaking pitches didn't do too much else, unfortunately, with only 8 called strikes and whiffs combined on 32 total pitches. And he also wasn't able to walk away with the win in this one. Those 5 walks were a little bit of an aberration, actually. He has a 3.6% walk rate on the season. However, if he can somehow maintain these strikeout numbers, he could still prove to be a decent end-of-the-rotation guy or a good streamer on your fantasy team. And then Nathan Eovaldi of the Texas Rangers, 5.1 innings with 2 hits, no earned runs, 2 walks, and 8 strikeouts. The 4-seamer and the splitter were working for Eovaldi today. He earned 10 called strikes on the fastball alone and 7 whips on the splitter. Yes, he was facing the Nationals. Unfortunately, he didn't get the quality start, but he walked away with a win and very good strikeout numbers. The fastball velocity was down a tick from his season average, so that's something to watch out for in the future. Eovaldi is just notorious for losing velocity as the season goes on. Last year, it scared us a little bit, and then he ended up going on the IL for a little while. Don't think that's necessarily going to be the issue here right now, but it is something to monitor as the season goes along.
So Kyle Harrison has looked really good so far this season. He's been surprisingly doing well, just a good streamer type at the moment with the chance to break out. He is a rookie, like you mentioned, and he's got some growing pains. Obviously, the 5 walks in this one weren't ideal, but he's working through some kinks. He's still got 7 strikeouts and 5 innings pitched, so I think Kyle Harrison's a sneaky good add if you have him out there and available for you. And then Eovaldi pitched amazing in this one. Like you said, he left with a little bit of an injury problem, I believe. Let me look it up real quick, because I saw it go day-to-day on Yahoo, and I want to make sure that it wasn't a true injury, because that would be a little unfortunate. But it says here that he left with groin tightness. So maybe that's why the velocity was down a little bit, because he had some groin tightness, but we'll have to see. So hopefully he's not injured, hopefully he stays healthy, and can continue to pitch like this. But that wraps up the player performances from this past week. We are going to take one last break, and when we come back, we will be joined by pitcherless writer Adam Solorio, who will talk about his latest article, Look Into the Future with Jared Jones. So stay tuned.
All right, we're back, and we're joined now by pitcherless writer Adam Solorio to talk about his article on Jared Jones. Before we get started, Adam, how are you doing?
It's going great, John. How about you?
Doing all right. Thanks for asking. So maybe just before we get started, just quick intro to the listeners of the pod. Maybe just talk about how'd you get involved in fantasy baseball, and maybe what's your favorite baseball teams, and just how'd you end up writing about Jared Jones, essentially?
Yeah. So I have always been obsessed with baseball, like I'm sure everyone listening to this podcast has been for their whole life, really. And, you know, I played ever since I was in T-ball all the way through school. And it was during the lockout back a few years ago that I really first got into fantasy baseball in a way, because I wasn't playing. There was no baseball going on, and there was no news about baseball at the time. So I figured, oh, it might be a good time to read up on some new trends that were happening in the game. And, you know, you go through YouTube, you go on Fangraphs, you go on our website, and I really just fell down the rabbit hole a bit of all advanced stats and analytics, really. And so, you know, I was reading a bunch of articles, and I was doing my own research in a way, and it just dawned on me one day. I said, I should write about this. You know, why not? I'm reading about it. I should write about it. So I started my own blog, and I wrote on there for about a year and a half. I still do on occasion. And I joined the team at PitcherList in January. So nice. I've been here for a few months. And I'm a Red Sox fan. My dad's a Red Sox fan. He's always said that I've been spoiled for my life because, of course, just you know the famous curse, didn't win a World Series until 2004. I've seen four in my lifetime. I feel like I'm paying. Well, I mean, they've been off to a hot start, but the past 2 years, I felt like I've paid my dues a little bit. But they've been off to a good start. I mean, it's a tough division, the AL East. I really had no expectations heading into this year. You know, it's been good performance by the pitching staff. Offense, man, you know, it's doing okay. Yeah. It's life as a Red Sox fan this year, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. The reason for my little bit of maybe not as much excitement about being a Red Sox fan is just because I'm a Twins fan and we're playing you guys tonight. So,
Sorry about that.
No, you're good. We were talking about on the podcast how I rostered three Red Sox pitchers on my home league. I've got Hauk, and then of course Bayo and Pivetta are currently out with injuries, but you guys have a real nice young kind of under the radar pitching staff in Boston right now.
I mean, for sure, I'm a fan of Pivetta, of course, and Crawford and Bayo, of course, and you know, there was a lot of Sox fans wanted us to sign a pitcher in the offseason, and I really wasn't. I mean, it's always nice to have pitching.
Oh, for sure.
It's always nice to sign a star free agent, but I wasn't necessarily part of that crowd. I mean, I'm happy with the pitching staff now. Yes, it can always get better, but yeah, we have some under the radar arms that I'm pretty happy with.
Yeah, especially kind of fun seeing Tanner Houck's kind of evolution from a guy who, you know, initially was kind of more of a bullpen guy, at least how they saw it of them, but now he's a full fledged starter and doing some good stuff.
Yeah, it's been good to watch.
Nice. Well, we are going to talk about another pitcher with a pretty nice slider, Jared Jones. And I think for all of us, myself included, Jared Jones was kind of a name that we didn't really know in the offseason. I think I literally learned about who he was maybe a week before opening day because Pittsburgh announced that they were promoting him to the big leagues to start. And so with that all being in mind, obviously – Pittsburgh has another amazing prospect pitcher, Paul Skeens, who, you know, most people knew. So with Jared Jones, though, can you maybe give us a quick rundown about, you know, who he was? You know, obviously, he's a very young prospect, only 22 years old. Was there any signs that he was going to be, you know, kind of as lights out as he has been for the last month?
Yeah. I'm in the same boat as you where he was not – he definitely was not on my radar entering this year. And, I mean, I do follow prospects a decent amount, but I want to consider myself an expert in it. And I was just like you where I just learned about him in spring training and really around the time of his first start. So I did some research into his minor league career, and he was drafted out of high school as a pitcher, which is always impressive. And in the minor leagues the past 2 years, he did rack up a decent amount of strikeouts. He had a 27% strikeout rate each of the last 2 years, which is good. You would expect more from a pitcher that would pitch the way he has at the major league level. So I looked at his Fangraphs grades to see what the scouts there thought about him. And they just updated their report on him this offseason, which is helpful for us. And they graded his fastball as a 60 present, 60 future, which checks out a bit. had a 55 present 60 future on the slider and a 40 present 50 future on the changeup, which all makes sense. I can say the fastball and slider were probably a bit underrated then, but I guess he has changed his release point and his extension since last year, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. And the most interesting part, though, came with his command. And they gave his command a 30 present 45 future.
That's rough. Which,
yeah, which first off is rough. It's kind of sad if I was a pitcher and I saw that. But that doesn't really line up with someone with a 3.8% walk rate to start the season. I mean, right. That's arguably at least 55 if you want to consider the small sample size. So it's very interesting. I admittedly didn't watch much minor league video of him, so I can't see if he changed his mechanics or if there was something else different going on with it that would result in the improved command. But I mean, it's a legit package. I mean, I guess the fastball and slider showed signs of life in the minors, and it's just improved this year, and it's been nothing but impressive to start the season.
Yeah, for sure. Let's get started on that fastball, because I think that is kind of the pitch that everyone is talking about when you're talking about Jared Jones. He throws it about 50% of the time. You know, I think Nick has compared his fastball to one Spencer Strider, who owns, you know, basically a top five fastball based on PLV last season. Mm-hmm. It's what is honestly so good about that fastball. We see fastballs come and go. You know, it has okay velocity, 97 mile an hour average there. But why are the stats on it so good?
Yeah, I mean, the two most important parts about his fastball that's great is he has great induced vertical break on it. He averages 18 inches of IVB, and he has a plus vertical approach angle. It's minus 4.1 if it's not adjusted. According to our adjusted VAA, it's 1.1, which is still really flat at the top of the zone. Mm-hmm. And you know, of course, with the IVB, it's how much the pitch resists gravity on the way to the plate. So having 18 inches of IVB, that's really going to have a rising effect to hitters at the plate. It's going to cause them to swing under it when the pitch is at the top of the zone. And vertical approach angle, of course, is measures the angle at which the pitch approaches the plate. And with having a minus 4.1, it's going to enter at that steep angle, which when combined with the plus IVB, it's really going to create a rising effect to opposing hitters. That's really going to cause them to swing under it. And yeah, we've seen the league adjust to pitches, to fastballs at the top of the zone like that. It's happened steadily over the past few years. But when you have the plus traits, as Jones has showed with it, it really makes for an effective offering. That's not even to mention the average velocity he has on the pitch. That's 97.2. I mean, yeah, it's not, you know, Mason Miller. Yes, he's a reliever, but minor difference. But you know, you see some guys have success with the steep fastball at a lesser velocity. So that definitely helps him out a lot, makes it dominant at top of the zone. And most of the pitch models, all the pitch models love the shape. Mm-hmm. And it's perfect comparison to Strider because they grade out almost exactly the same. With Strider's fastball last year, it was a 5.51 PLV. And according to Stuff Plus on Fangraphs, it was a 141 Stuff Plus. With Jones, it's a 5.49 PLV this year and a 144 Stuff Plus, almost exactly the same. So all that combined, it might be a fair comparison to compare him to Strider. I think comparisons like this can get out of hand sometimes. I'm usually very conservative with my comparisons to players, you know, but he's definitely on the path to be compared to Spencer Strider with that elite fastball. That's great.
Yeah. I mean, especially like comparisons to a guy who was essentially drafted as the number one pitcher in fantasy baseball. You know, sometimes you want to pump the brakes just a little bit and be like, well, you know, he's good, but maybe we can't call him like the most elite pitcher ever. But I mean, through what is it? Six starts.
Yeah,
through six starts, you know, that fastball has been absolutely killer. Just, you know, even if you look at like the very basic metrics of it, you know, a 20% swing strike rate, which is insane. The fact that he's generating that many whiffs on just a fastball alone is really solid. In terms of contact metrics, for the most part, it's inducing a lot of ground balls, which is nice to see. And guys aren't really turning on it for fly balls, which is, sometimes you can see that from guys who throw four seamers. But yeah, it's just been a really, really solid pitch and sets a really good table for primarily his slider, but he does have a couple other breaking pitches as well.
Yeah, it's a great pitch.
Yeah. Well, talking about this slider, that's the pitch that he throws pretty much almost the rest of the time. It's a 40% usage on that pitch. And you mentioned in the article that the slider has more of a gyro-like shape. And I think for guys who have been kind of for people who have been paying attention to kind of like slider shapes and things like that, obviously nowadays we kind of have so many different types of sliders. The gyro slider, there's the sweeping slider. What is kind of special about this gyro shape slider that works really well with his fastball?
It's a great pitch, a slider, and I have this saying about sliders, and even just when you evaluate a pitcher's pitch arsenal in general, to have a slider, it's great. To have a sweeper, it's great. But it all depends on what fits in the arsenal for the pitcher, whether it's a need he has among his pitches or if it fits his release point, if it solves a weakness against a certain handedness. Mm-hmm. And this slider really fits Jones' arsenal well. I try to think of it as looking in the mind of a hitter. And if you're facing Jones, he throws his fastball over 50% of the time. He's going to want to locate it up in the zone. If you're a hitter, you are probably going to be sitting on the fastball. Either you're confident in your abilities as a hitter and you sit on it upstairs, or you hope he makes a mistake with it and it lies over the heart of the plate and you crush the fastball. What makes the slider so great is that it has such tight spin on it. It really pairs well with the fastball. It tunnels well, especially with the location. He throws the slider and it's been fantastic location to start the year. It's low and away to righties and low and into lefties, where usually we use the word fade for changeups. I don't know if it's necessarily the right word, but it works in my mind. It fades on the hitter. You sit on that fastball, you see the slider coming, and you just swing and miss either over it or you just completely pull off it. And I think that's what makes the slider really effective, is it really blends in well. If he had a sweeper, he sits 88.6 with this gyro slider. Let's put the sweeper at 84 miles per hour, 84, 83, with obviously more movement. It might pop and jump out of his hand a lot more, especially as a two-pitch pitcher, where you're going to be just sitting on the fastball, where it might make it easier for hitters to see it out of his hand. Probably wouldn't generate as much swing and miss out of the zone, and sweepers are generally tougher to command in the zone. So I think that's why what makes a slider so great. And if you go back to the comparison with Strider, he has a very similar thing with his slider. He has more of a bullety slider, and Jones's slider grades out a lot better than Strider's on most of the pitch models. For POV, it's a 546 POV for Jones on his slider. And for Strider, it's a 504. Still a good pitch for his slider. And that's with Stuff Plus, Jones is 131 and Strider's 105. So, yeah, it's a great pairing with his fastball. And it also helps with when he faces left-handed hitters.
Yeah.
If Jones had a sweeper, we know that sweepers don't perform as well against the opposite handedness. That would pretty much make Jones a one-pitch pitcher against left-handed hitters, unless he was able to improve his performance with his changeup. So I think that really makes his slider fit well with his arsenal.
Yeah, I think the effectiveness against lefties is actually such a key thing. Just because, like you were describing, with those sweepers, they're not running away from the left-handed hitter, right? They're kind of sweeping into the left-hand hitter, at least the left-hand hitter box, right? So you're trying to throw like a back foot slider. You're hoping to get maybe some, you know, some front door sliders for called strikes or things like that. But his pitch is one that generates whiffs against lefties, right? And I think that's so cool to see for a guy who knows how to basically use his this two-pitch mix, you know, that throws it about 90% of the time is either a fastball or a slider. He uses it well against both-handed pitchers, and I think that is part of the success that's making it work out so well for him. Like, he's basically not getting he's not losing the platoon advantage, so to speak. When the opposing managers like see like, oh, a righty's up, let's put a bunch of lefties up there. It's like, no, I've got two pitches that work well against both sides of the plate.
Yeah, exactly.
So maybe that kind of leads into, you know, the third question, because, you know, typically when we talk about pitchers with good pitches, right, it's like, well, you know, we'd ideally want to see one elite pitch, a second pitch that gets whiffs against like kind of the opposite handed or the same handed pitcher, and then another pitch that you use against the opposite handed hitter guy, right? But his slider works against both sides, so he doesn't necessarily employ like a third or fourth pitch to kind of help him get you know, guys out at the plate that have a platoon advantage. Yeah. But he does still have this curveball and this changeup. 15% combined on both of them. It's about 7% each. Yeah. How much do you think he needs to work on getting these pitches to use them more? Or does he even need to use these pitches more?
Yeah, I mean, he's been having good success with the four-seam and slider. I can't necessarily say that's a bad thing, you know. Mm-hmm. But he does have a change in curveball, and both grade out well, and they have okay potential. Both are good, not great, as I call it. Mm-hmm. And the curveball, the location definitely needs to improve on it. If you look at any of his location plots, it looks to be all over the place in the zone. Yeah. It's good for a called strike, maybe, if he can get a better feel for it. It's good for a surprise pitch now and then, as it currently is, or if a certain hitter has a particular weakness against a curveball, I wouldn't be opposed with him using it. But if he develops a good curveball, I would just consider it a cherry on top, I guess I can call it. With the changeup, I think the changeup, I would like to see better location on the changeup. I think that would really be great for him. Because just as you said, it would make it, yes, the slider performs great against lefties, but having a changeup would be even better to use against, I mean, would get even better results against lefties. So if he's able to get it down and away to left-handed hitters, that'd be great. If you look at a plot of his locations now, it's located more towards the middle of the zone. Mm-hmm. One could argue that's, you know, he throws a fastball at the top of the zone. Maybe that works, but I don't think a pitching coach would tell you to put a changeup in the middle of the zone.
Yeah.
Because if a hitter hits that, it's going a long way. So it'd be great if he got it low in the zone, especially against left-handed hitters. That would definitely raise his floor and his ceiling, really, because it would just be great to get – he would just have two great weapons against lefties, two great weapons against righties, could use the slider against lefties. It would definitely make him solid as an ace potential for Pittsburgh going forward.
Yeah, I definitely recommend, you know, if listeners haven't seen the article yet, to check it out, because there's some good images that you pulled in there from, you know, kind of the PLV, I forget what we call them, like the pitcher heat maps or
something like that.
But basically just indicating, hey, this is where this pitch is landing. And I think that curveball, it's a little bit higher in this. Sorry, not the curveball, the changeup. The changeup is a little bit higher in the zone than probably you'd like it to be. Like you said, you know, more of a down and away sort of movement. And I think one important thing that you noted in the article is that both pitchers are only used about 4% of the time against right-handed hitters. They're really more a tool for him to help get out lefties, right? Is that kind of the case here with those two pitches?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, that's definitely where he needs to work on. Is if there was anything he needs to work on, would probably be to develop those against left-handed hitters. Because the fastball and slider, it's two great pitches to use against right-handed hitters. He's throwing the fastball in the zone. He's been throwing the slider in the zone as of now. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's pretty solid against right-handed hitters, but that would definitely be, if there's any room for improvement, would definitely be developing both those pitches against left-handed hitters.
Yeah. Well, so I think the big question that I think on everyone's mind is how good can Jared Jones really be? And, mm-hmm. You know, according to Nick's rankings, he's 20th on the pitcher list. Obviously he's only 22 years old, right? Super young. Mm-hmm. Probably still a lot of potential development in his future. Is there any reason why we should maybe be pumping the brakes on Jared Jones? And I think I maybe add one caveat here. You know, in his most recent start, his last fastball, I think, at the game was like at 93 miles an hour, which is mm-hmm. obviously pretty low in his in comparison to his average velocity. He does have a game tomorrow, I believe, against Cincinnati, or Saturday against Cincinnati. So we'll see how that start goes in terms of injury. But if you're going to throw out the injury concern with Jared Jones, mm-hmm. which is real for a guy who throws 97, 98 miles an hour pretty consistently.
Yeah.
Is there any reason, just looking at his pitches, that you would think maybe this is where he plateaus and this is as good as it gets for Jared Jones?
Yeah, there's definitely a few question marks I do have with him. I think the command on the slider is, I really don't want to say it's too good, mm-hmm. but he's really been locating it well. And we do know that pure stuff is stickier than being able to measure how well you command your pitches. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there might be some regression in terms of the command. It's mainly based off vibes. But, sure. you know, but it seems kind of inevitable to me that he's going to hang a few sliders and mm-hmm. they're going to get hit. I feel like you can't keep pounding the bottom of the zone with sliders that consistently. And maybe that grade that they had on Fangraphs with his command at 30-45, mm-hmm. maybe it regresses toward that. I mean, they've obviously seen him pitch more than I have. So maybe that could be a signal that the command will regress on that pitch. Really with the fastball, I really don't have much concern with it. I think the fastball will be great regardless. And that's a great foundation to have for the rest of your mm-hmm. pitch arsenal. I think in terms of just the stats we look at to see if a pitcher is overperforming or underperforming, he is allowing a .247 batting average on balls in play. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily extreme, but it's good. It's going to regress back up to the mean a little bit. He does have a high left on base percentage at 90.1%. That'll definitely regress a little bit too. So he'll allow more runs, but his home run to fly ball ratio is almost at 22%, which would probably regress downward. I mean, even though pitchers that have fastballs up in the zone will usually have a high rating for that, it'll probably regress a little bit. So I think there will just be a slight overall regression for him. He'll probably have a slightly higher ERA moving forward just because of the regression in those areas. Mm-hmm. And that dip in velocity is definitely something that I'll be watching for moving forward. It's very hard to predict if a pitcher is going to get injured. He has a clean injury history, at least as a professional.
Yeah.
As far as I was able to see, which is always good to see.
Yeah.
All his health data before he was a pro is the Wild West. You never know, but he seems good for us so far. But mm-hmm. it'll be something to look out for. I mean, you see how cautious Pittsburgh is with Skeens in the minor leagues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would imagine they would be cautious with him if they see more velo dips. So they'll definitely be something to look out for moving forward. But I think overall, I mean, yeah, the Strider comparison is fair, maybe a little lofty, but it's definitely reasonable. It will definitely be a pitcher to watch closely over the next few weeks.
Yeah, and it's also not to say that, you know, Jared Jones has been perfect, right? He's got a 3.18 yes. ERA. He's, you know, has a tendency to give up a few runs here and there. So it's not like he is this absolute wunderkind who is finishing every game with 6 innings, 9 strikeouts, and 1 earned run, right? There's yeah. some stuff there that's like, yeah, you know, like the home runs are a little bit of an issue, and
exactly.
He does give up a bunch of runs, but
Yeah.
That all being said, he's still doing really well. Right? Like he definitely has earned his ranking for sure.
For sure. Yeah. For sure.
So, you know, let's then kind of have some fun and try to figure out, you know, what type of pitchers we want to, which pitchers we like and which pitchers we don't like. Yep. So we're going to talk player comparisons, and this is just going to be in the context of a standard 5x5 categories league. Of course, one of the names that we mentioned in this one, Grayson Rodriguez, is on the IL, so there's a little bit of a fun twist there. But assuming, you know, all these guys are healthy, I kind of picked some young guys who are kind of known for the fastball, so that's kind of maybe the comparison here. But let's just start out with Jared Jones or Grayson Rodriguez. Who do you like more, and who are you taking in fantasy?
Yeah, they're both really close with both their ceilings are really close to each other. I was looking through it. I think I would take Jones for the strikeouts, definitely. He definitely have more strikeouts. I mean, the walks as of now, in terms of whip, I would give to Jones slightly, but you don't know how it's going to regress, like I just said. But I would probably take Rodriguez at the end of the day. Yes, there's the injury concern, which is a little concerning from that news from the past couple of days, but they're so close to each other, in my opinion. They both play in good ballparks to pitch in. I would say for me, just because Rodriguez is on the better team, makes me more confident in the wins, makes me a little more confident that they're going to help out with his ERA in the field and his whip in the field too. So I would probably take Rodriguez over Jones, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's kind of tough because when you look at the two guys, it's Rodriguez obviously has like the much better win percentage and yes, just being in, you know, one of the hottest teams in baseball, and meanwhile Jared Jones is on the Pirates, who we all know nothing good ever happens to that team.
Not at all.
There's a reason why they got the number one overall pick last season. That all being said, I think with me, like, obviously the wins are huge for Rodriguez. The strikeout numbers are somewhat similar. I think Jones definitely has an impact there. I think when I look at ERA and WHIP, though, it's like, oh, you know, Jones has a really solid WHIP compared to Grayrod, but he also has like you said, that 35 graded command, it's hard to say if that's real or not. I think at the end of the day, I'd probably go with Grayrod too, only because I think there's a bit more track record for him in the majors as well, better wins there. I like the ceiling of Jones a lot compared to Grayrod, just because if that WHIP stays, if that walk rate stays, then I could see him leap over Grayrod in a month or two. But
for sure,
that's definitely a tough one. I think I lean with you though and go Grayrod right now, just because there's a better win chance. The next pick, Logan Gilbert or Jared Jones, who do you got?
Yeah, this was a close one, me too. I think Jones definitely beats Gilbert with those strikeouts. I mean, it's definitely high strikeout rate, close in walk rate. I would probably give the edge to Gilbert in terms of walk rate going forward. I would say just because of my concerns, like I said, with the slider command and that 30 grade command, like we've talked about. I think at the end of the day, I think with Gilbert, he's pitched 180 innings the last two seasons. Jones's max in the minors was 126 innings last year and 122 innings the year before. I keep going back to how Pittsburgh has been pretty cautious with Skeens. I think they'll probably be cautious with Jones. So Gilbert's going to give you more innings. So, and he probably will give you more wins too, being on Seattle. So in terms of the counting stats, I would go with Gilbert. I would say probably Logan Gilbert for this year. If Jones improves, he pitches more innings. If Pittsburgh gets better next year, I would probably take Jones next year. But Gilbert, I think for the rest of this season, would probably be my pick.
I hate to be like kind of dinging Jones for being the rookie here, but the track record for Gilbert is crazy. Last two seasons, 185 innings in both of those, you know, solid ERA and WHIP guy.
Yep.
Yeah, I the this the the metrics between them are actually so similar because Gilbert's got a 0.8 whip. Jones has a 0.9 whip. Yep. Gilbert with a 29% strikeout rate. Jones with nearly 32% strikeout rate. So, yeah, I think for me here, I think the wins are actually maybe a little bit more equal. Seattle's been kind of slumping as well.
So yeah, it's true.
I think for that reason, you know, knowing everything equal, I might take Jones in this one just because I think the strikeouts, if that sticks with him, that'd be insane. But if I'm playing the long game here and I'm like, I have a bunch of like injury prone guys, maybe I end up going with Gilbert because having 180 innings from that you can guarantee from a dude who's really solid is pretty good compared to like you know, maybe a guy who might be limited to, you know, 160, 170 in Jones.
Yeah, it's not that common to find a guy that goes 180 plus for multiple years in a row.
Right.
I mean, like you said, especially like Gilbert, you could get, you know, a Kyle Gibson. I mean, that's not an attack on Kyle Gibson, but you know, but you know, you get a Kyle Gibson or something. But with Logan Gilbert, there's definitely more upside there. So
yeah, for sure. It's 100. Sense. It's 180 quality innings, we should say, right?
Exactly.
Not 180 Kyle Gibson innings.
Exactly.
Although I have there's a place in my heart for Kyle Gibson being a former Twin, but
there you go.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Last one: Jared Jones or Tanner Bibee?
Jared Jones or Tanner Bibee? Yeah, that was definitely an interesting one. I mean, Jones once again with the more strikeouts. Mm-hmm. I would give to Jones. I think Jones will probably wind up having a lower walk rate than Bibee this year. I think once it all equals out, and they both play in good parks to pitch, so it was closer than I thought it was going to be when I was thinking about this. But mm-hmm. I would probably give it to Jones against Bibee. If you need innings on your roster, like we were saying before, if you want to lean toward more experience, I can't fault you for picking Bibee over Jones. But if this was my team and I was picking between Jones and Bibee, I would probably give the edge to the upside of Jones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like Bibee just had a really solid game against Atlanta, 7 innings with, you know, 2 hits, no runs, 9 strikeouts. But
yeah,
I feel like that's kind of his ceiling. You know, it's mm-hmm. he's not going to be that kind of pitcher for the future as far as I know. Obviously he could definitely prove me wrong. I think Jones does have the better ceiling. If you just look at the stats right now, he's better in pretty much every single metric compared to Bibee.
Exactly.
So I think for that reason, I'm with you. I go Jared Jones here. I think there's just more upside there. I think even if you get less innings out of Jared Jones, the quality of inning is going to be a lot better, especially if that whip stays the same. Jones right now has a 4% walk rate. Bibee's got a 9% walk rate, right? So it's mm-hmm. double that, and that, I think that's a clear indicator that, you know, there's that Jones has maybe a little bit more stuff going on. So yeah, I think I'm with you. I go Jared Jones here instead of Tanner Bibee, but also kind of a tough one because Bibee, I think, has better win potential, even though Cleveland is Cleveland. Like they're the best team in the AL right now. So can't argue against that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there's definitely more win potential there. Yeah.
All right. Well, that kind of wraps up our comparison segment, but always a fun time to talk young pitchers and see, you know, who's got the edge here. Definitely a lot of fun young guys. A lot of fun young pitchers, especially with all the injuries. I think we're going to see some of these other guys step up and be, you know, bigger names on at least the fantasy baseball stage, and see where they're at. So Adam, thanks again for coming on the show. Appreciate you talking about Jared Jones. Is there any way that people can connect with you on social media? Or you got any upcoming articles coming out on PitcherList or maybe even your blog?
Yeah, so I am. You can find me on X at at Adam Solorio. My username is MLB Daily Stats with an underscore. That's where you can find me on X. I am on PitcherList, of course, and I am on Substack. I post every now and then on my Substack too. And yeah, I have stuff coming out pretty much every week on PitcherList. And like you said, there's a lot of young pitching to dive into with all the injuries. So I'm excited to look at some new pitchers and dive deeper into them, and maybe we'll find another Jones this season.
Yeah, that would be incredible if that could happen.
That would be incredible. Yes, it would be very incredible.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for coming on the show. Appreciate it.
Thanks, John. Thank you.
All right. Thank you to Adam Solorio for joining us and talking about Jared Jones. It was a great time. And before we wrap up, let's get into the streamers for next week. John, who are you recommending this time around?
All right. This is a kind of a grab bag of streamers, so don't shoot the messenger here, but I've got some interesting options. We're going to start with Gavin Stone, 25% on Yahoo, 6% on ESPN in terms of rostership. If you're hunting for an early week win chance, Gavin Stone might be a good bet as he goes up against Miami on Wednesday. Stone doesn't really offer much as a fantasy pitcher as he doesn't have great strikeout stuff, and the ERA and whip on the season aren't great. But as a streamer against one of the worst offenses in the league, as we talked about with Walker Buehler, he also has one of the best offenses behind him, if you didn't know that about the Dodgers. So yeah, I feel like that's a pretty good opportunity for a win there with maybe some okay ERA and whip numbers. Ben Lively of the Guardians is also a potential streamer. He is 7% roster on Yahoo, 3% on ESPN. Again, we're matchup hunting here, and he gets to face the worst offense in the league in the Chicago White Sox. And the White Sox actually have come to life in the past couple games. We did just talk about two of them. So they aren't a complete pushover anymore. But Lively has decent strikeout stuff, and with Cleveland being one of the top teams in the AL right now, he's also got a good win chance here. And then Jose Soriano, 5% rostered on Yahoo, 1% on ESPN. He goes up against Pittsburgh. And honestly, I don't really believe in this stream. But depending on how Soriano does against the Guardians on Friday, it could be decent. His most recent start was against the Twins, and he got destroyed in 1.2 innings. However, the three starts prior, he had pretty okay strikeout numbers, so-so results in terms of walks and earned runs. But he is facing Pittsburgh, which is a bottom five team in offense. He's got pretty decent pitches, even though he's kind of crazy with them. But anything can happen here, including a win. So if you're feeling lucky, this might be a dart to throw.
So my rankings for these three would be Gavin Stone, Jose Soriano, Ben Lively. And that's just because the White Sox have kind of been a little bit hot as of recent. So obviously it doesn't mean anything because they're a bad offense. So they probably will just go back to normal at some point. And who knows, it could be against Ben Lively. But the Dodgers with Gavin Stone, I'm obviously going to trust that against the Marlins, who have been terrible. And Gavin Stone has good stuff and could probably make it through five and get a win here. Jose Soriano, I like a lot, and I like him against Pittsburgh, so I like that. And then Ben Lively last for that. And also, I'll just add again, if Christian Scott is out there, obviously he's not a streamer, but just go and pick him up. I would prioritize him probably right behind Gavin Stone. I think I would rather roster Gavin Stone just on the sheer chance that he stays in the rotation of the Dodgers, but he might leave the rotation with Buehler coming back if he stinks, and they have a lot of guys coming back, so the Dodgers could push anybody out at any time. So maybe Gavin Stone's not too safe, but I would wrestle with him and Christian Scott for who to pick up and keep. But for streaming, Gavin Stone is definitely the best option. You recommend it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think I'm maybe less high on Jose Soriano, but he's got decent stuff. So that will play in most leagues.
Yeah, his stuff is pretty good. And if he just has it, then it'll probably be a good stream. If he doesn't, then that's what streaming will get you. So yeah, I like him, but not more than Gavin Stone. So those are the streamers for next week. And that wraps up this episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Before you all head out, make sure you follow us on Twitter at ThisWeekPL and send us your comments and questions to our email at ThisWeekPLpod@gmail.com. You can find John on Twitter at TheJohnKe, that's THEJOHNKE, and you can follow myself on Twitter, that's at Regicidal, REGICIDAL. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitcher List podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts on. And please leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitcher List Plus. By doing so, you can join us in the Pitcher List Discord and get advice from all of the fantasy experts and writers over there. But that's all for this week. We will be back next week with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For John, I'm Lee. And we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.